countdown to the last comic shop in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hey, hey! It is now time for more of the last comic shop.
That is correct. We are opening up the shop to newbies to help them find their way underneath this big comic book tent.
And we're keeping the lights on for the oldies and the moldies that are going to read our book this week and be like, wait a minute, was that always that thing? I don't think that was that. Wait, that means it? Nah.
let me do some math.
Doesn't make sense. Why weren't people talking about this? Because a lot of folks talk about Tom King books. That's right. Tom King is a very, very popular writer. And he often takes some of DC's most famous characters and kind of puts them on trajectories that you didn't really think of at the time, but later on makes sense. And we've got another one of his books on this week's show. I'm the host with the most, Andy Larson, and I'm joined by Jay Scott and Chad Smith for another wonderful episode all about Tom King and Batman. That's right. More Batman on the last comic shop. You know, I think I posited this earlier on a previous show, whether or not we've read more books by Tom King than any other author. Have we read more Batman books than any other character on the last comic shop?
You know, we have data and spreadsheets.
I got to get the accountants here. Hold on. Hold on.
Let's see. Let's go to all shows.
You know, Chad Smith, every year he likes to put together our numbers here at the last comic shop. And so, yeah, Chad, how many Batman books have we done?
So just straight Batman books, it is 7.
Wow.
In our vast history. This will be book number 8 if we're counting Gotham City, year 1, which I don't think we said the name of the book yet. But yeah, so 7 Batman books. And then as far as Tom King goes, I don't have that kind of time. We did Vision. That was one of our first shows.
Right.
We did Rorschach.
Right.
Mr. Miracle.
Absolutely.
Human Target.
That's 4.
And did we do a Batman, Tom King?
No, we did, Strange Adventures. Yeah.
So this is 6. So he's just barely trailing Batman.
Right. And speaking of Batman, it was an opportunity I felt on this week's show to talk about some of those other weird and strange theories that you may come up with about Batman in your own headcanon to kind of explain stuff that sometimes doesn't make as much sense as you might want it to be. I mean, J.A., you've always mentioned the one about what Batman could really be if he wasn't running around in tights, right?
Well, I think they even mentioned it. It gets a shout out in one of the DCEU movies. Is essentially, if Batman spent his grand fortune on philanthropy rather than on Batmobiles, would Gotham not be better off?
I mean, that was like the whole in what, Catwoman Lonely City that we just read a couple weeks ago from Cliff Chang. Yeah, they were like, well, what happened if they just used all the money for doing good things as opposed to running around?
There was a really funny Saturday Night Live sketch. He's in an urban area and just talking to all these people like, that dude held my brother-in-law out a window, broke his ankle. And they just talk about the terror that he unleashes upon the city.
Right. And that kind of goes hand in hand with an interesting theory that was thrown out there on the socials by our good friend, Mikey Wood, frequent Last Comic Shop guest, in which he said that he was convinced that not only Jim Gordon knows who Batman is, and the majority of Batman's rogues gallery in terms of the main folks, but almost all of the rogues gallery know that Batman is Bruce Wayne. And you would ask why they don't do anything about it. Simply put, if they eliminate Bruce Wayne from the equation, then he's just Batman 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's kind of like they get a little bit of a break from Batman constantly being there because he has to pretend to be Bruce Wayne once in a while. So, like, if they want a vacation at any point or PTO, then they have to have Bruce Wayne, or else, yeah, it's just terrifying. And I thought that was not only a very interesting theory, but I wanted to take it one step further. So here's my theory, gentlemen. Everybody knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman because pretty much Gotham is a police state. And if you really thought of it, an uber-rich plutocrat that has 24/7 surveillance on everybody, drives around in a tank, and regularly beats the piss out of anybody he considers bad, why would you call him out? Why would you make him mad? So, like, everybody just keeps their mouth shut and looks the other way.
So you're saying Gotham's villains are just fighting the good fight, trying to oppose this fascist.
Right, they're exactly.
They're just rebels without a cause.
But it and a costume. He's insane. Yeah. Criminals are a cowardly and superstitious lot? No, Bruce Wayne is cowardly and superstitious. He has to put on tights and run around or else he doesn't feel good. So, and that's weird. That's weird, man. Chad, what do you think? I mean, you're a longtime Batman fan. Do you have any strange theories or anything you'd like to comment on?
I just have my longstanding theory that Batman is simultaneously the best and worst character in comics.
Okay.
He is so stupid in his conception. A little boy's parents are murdered and he gets mad. And then spends the rest of his life, you know, being this fascist vigilante. Like, if you think about it too long, oh, it's not good at all. But because there's not a lot to Batman's personality. I mean, sure, he is vengeance. He is the knight. He is a whole lot of nothing. But because there's nothing to him in terms of depth, you know, he's a, you know, 6-year-old wish fulfillment fantasy thing. He's so malleable that because Batman is nothing, Batman is everything. Yeah. And Batman can be your campy Batman. Batman can be your Dark Knight detective. Batman can be your grizzled old fascist ready to take back the streets with his mutant gangs. Batman can be Christian Bale. And he can ask questions like this. Batman can be anything to anyone.
He can even be George Clooney and those pointy nipples.
So handsome, but still, yeah, Batman, because he's not a great character, he's the greatest character.
Oh, I see. Well, last question before we get to commercial break then real quickly. Is there a particular Batman that you guys prefer more than another one? Again, he's been all over the map, done so many different things and been used in so many different scenarios. In this particular book, Batman's just used as a guy that a story's being told to. J.A., what's your favorite kind of Batman?
I like the detective. I like when Batman is the Dark Knight detective and working to figure out evil crime and help Gotham, not so much when he's camp or when he's going up against supervillains or doing the fisticuffs with Bane. I like when he's the detective and trying to figure out using his bat sleuthing skills.
My bat sleuth spray. Try saying that 3 times fast. Chad?
I liked 1970s Neil Adams Batman, where he was like an Olympic-level athlete adventurer. And he wasn't a bat god, but he also wasn't afraid to take his shirt off and try to stab you with a sword.
Is that where he would take his shirt off, but he still had the cowl on?
Yes. Yeah, and Ra's al Ghul's like, no, you're dead. No, I'm just here and I'm freaking awesome.
I think it's super easy for me. I liked Batman from the animated series. I think that like kind of wrapped up everything that's wonderful about Batman, kind of put it into a nice little package. The one thing I will say before we end is the only Batman I really don't like is the Batman on the Justice League. I hate Batman as the quote unquote greatest tactician ever. I think that's real stupid. Yeah, I've got a plan to defeat everybody on the Justice League.
Time plus Batman equals win?
Yes. It is a narrative cul-de-sac. It takes no imagination to just be like, well, if you just give Batman enough time, he can defeat anything. No, that's bunk. I don't believe it at all. So I like a Batman that's fallible and one that's got a lot of humanity, and I think that's Batman the Animated Series Batman. So
not Batman Year One, where he's kicking trees. Show those trees.
Saving cats.
That's right.
That's a good Batman, too.
That's a great Batman.
Yeah, absolutely. But we're
wait. Not the Norm Breakfogle Batman that's beating up the 80s style street thugs and their leather jackets.
I do like the Jim Aparo Batman who's doing the same thing, punching one guy, and before he falls down, he's already got another guy punched to right. death as well.
Wait. You don't like the various Elseworlds Batmans where one time he's Dracula and he has the Kelly Jones big ears? He's all hunched over.
All right.
What about Azbats? What about when Dick Grayson was Batman? What about when Thomas Wayne was Batman at a party in Batman's youth? And then well, like secretly that's Batman.
That's something we're going to talk about, Thomas
but
Wayne.
But wait, that guy now in Flashpoint.
Chad, we got to get to the book review. We're going to be reviewing Gotham City Year One by Tom King and Phil Hester right after these commercial breaks. We'll have more Batman talk sooner or later because we're going to cover more Batman books guaranteed. Yeah. Stay tuned for more.
But Batman's barely in this one. I mean, he's just elderly care Batman talking to an old gentleman.
Can you put on NCIS?
Okay there, Gramps. Have some more Metamucil.
Hey, it's Mikey Wood, frequent Last Comic Shop guest and collector. And as a collector, I'm always in need of boards, bags, long boxes, and more to house all those comics. That's why I use promo code LCSPOD to get 10% off my orders at bcwsupplies.com. Not only does it get me a discount on BCW's already low prices, but I know using LCSPOD at checkout is another way I can show my support to the Last Comic Shop podcast and their continuing mission to bring fans together under that big comic book tent. So if you're in need of comic book supplies, head out to bcwsupplies.com and use promo code LCSPOD today. That's LCSPOD.
Hello, Last Comic Shop listeners. This is John from Part-Time Comics. You may have heard of our great series, Drumsticks of Doom or Child Possession Services, but we have a new series coming out in 2024, LCS. A series of global catastrophes has left life on Earth decimated and made comic collecting a huge disaster. Follow a group of survivors as they run the Last Comic Shop. You can find more information on any of these books at linktree.com/parttimecomics. That's Part-Time Comics with an X.
All right, we're back with more of the Last Comic Shop, and it is now time for another Read Pile Review. Yes, a time when we pick another Tom King book, because we really do enjoy Tom King here at the Last Comic Shop, and we decide to discuss what Tom King's doing next to the DC Universe. Again, our book for this week is Gotham City Year One that came out last year. Again, it was something that I wanted to read for quite some time, so I'm glad that J.A. picked it. So, J.A., without further ado, who worked with Tom King on this particular pick of yours?
Okay, so Gotham City Year One was written by Tom King with pencils by Phil Hester, inks by Eric Gapster, colorist was Jordi Belair, letters by the always dependable Clayton Cowles, and then on the collected edition, which we had a bunch of variant cover artists, some good, some great, some you look and you like, oh,
do you want to
entire
comments?
Book would have been great. Oh, yeah, there's a Greg Smallwood cover, and I was like, oh, I wish I had the whole book with Greg Smallwood. Maybe. I don't know. Would have been a different book.
Yeah, no, I agree that I look forward to another Tom King, Greg Smallwood mashup, but at the same time, I'll comment on where that train of thought could lead, and I'm not necessarily sure whether that's a good thing. Anyways, the good thing for all of our listeners is if you haven't read the book, here's your 10-cent synopsis from Chad Smith. So, Chad, what happens in Gotham City Year One?
Okay, this is Tom King dipping into his noir well of ink here. We've got a couple of different characters. It starts off with Slam Bradley getting handed a letter and a payment therefor. And it turns out that letter was given to him by a lady named Queenie, who happens to be in a relationship, which, by the way, we should caution. Spoilers ahoy. Spoilers, oh boy. If you don't want to be spoiled, read the book and then come back. But anyway, Queenie Sue is potentially messing around with one Richard Bruce Wayne, who is married to Bruce Wayne's grandma. Her name's Constance, and she is our femme fatale in this particular story. The whole letter thing is about Helen Wayne, who is a kidnapped baby. And then we go back to Richard, who's a bit of a louse, like I said. He's using the Batcave for his little hookup layer sex dungeon. Some machinations ensue. Eventually, we're introduced to why Crime Alley becomes Crime Alley, why Gotham City has such a police problem, and where Ace Chemicals comes from, which plays a role in the Joker's future. But all that and more waits for us here in Gotham City, year one.
Ooh, yes.
Which, it's year one, but it's not really year one, because Gotham City was around before then.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's always been a city in New Jersey. That was one of the coolest things that Chad ever brought up, was the fact that Gotham City is in New Jersey.
No, it's not New Jersey.
I thought it was Delaware. I'm pretty sure Metropolis is in Delaware and Gotham City is in New Jersey. We are dealing with some Jersey boys here with the wonderful Slam Bradley. Oh my, Slam Bradley. Punch him in the eye, Slam Bradley. Make him want to cry, Slam Bradley. I love Slam Bradley. And he is actually one of the first characters to appear in Detective Comics, well even before Batman showed up in that particular title. You had Slam Bradley stories, I think, as far back as Detective Comics number one.
The one with that fairly racist cover?
Yeah. Yes. So it's very apropos that Slam Bradley is the main character of Gotham City Year One, given the fact that he was one of the main characters of Detective Comics well before Batman ever showed his cape and cowl. And I do want to kind of, again, make sure that everybody's aware that there's going to be spoilers, because we're going to spoil the hell out of it. The first thing I want to throw out there is the interesting development you got about Slam Bradley and his relationship to Batman. J.A., want to unpack that?
Well, it essentially says that he is Thomas Wayne's father through a one-night stand with Constance Wayne the night before her husband is killed.
Wow. So Batman is actually a Bradley. That's his pappy. So there's a good reason.
And then Slam Bradley has also a backstory in this, in that he is passing as a white man who is not white.
Yeah. He is part African-American. So that means lots of things. I was surprised that there wasn't any blow up about this, right? Like, I mean, everybody blows up about Tom King and what he does in some of these books. Was there any blow up about this?
Well, I was distracted by the math of Gotham City. He's map of the United States. Anyway, the fact that Batman is part black man, Batman is Slam Bradley's grandchild, I don't think anybody cared. I think it's part of Tom King, and unfortunately, as much as we love Tom King, and Tom King has participated in the creation of many a fine story, the fact of the matter is, no one cares about Tom King doing Batman work. It is the equivalent of trying to make Fetch happen. And so even when Tom King's like, no, Batman's a black guy, no one cares. What? Batman's great-granddad was Slam Bradley! Everyone's like, Who's Slam?
That is true. I had to ask who was Slam Bradley. I just thought he was a character from this book. I didn't realize he was on the cover of Detective Comics number one. I just looked up online, and yes, that is a horrendously racist cover. Jeez.
A little bit. Was it Yellow Claw?
Right, something like that, yeah.
Was that the Marvel guy?
Okay. And it's sad, too, because there are actually, if you ever want a treat, and this is not a plug for our social media, but oftentimes I do post these Golden Age covers to put everybody to bed at night, and some of my favorite ones are actually not so much from Detective Comics, but from Action Comics. Action Comics actually had some really awesome covers that didn't involve Superman whatsoever, but I digress. Back to Chad's point about, like, nobody cares about Tom King writing Batman and him trying to make Batman, I don't know, like, that ship sailed. One other thing that I wanted to comment on is the fact that I've said before, and I've said it again, I do love Tom King's writing, right? I think that this book just like all the other Tom King books, are probably head and shoulders over a lot of other comic books that I've read this year. But I'm starting to find that it's okay that Tom King wants to write film noir stories. But I'm starting to get to the point where I would like Tom King to write something else. I really love some of Tom King's earlier works, such as The Vision, and especially Mr. Miracle, because I don't feel they fall into any sort of film noir trope. Again, especially Mr. Miracle. Mr. Miracle is something completely different. You know, it's multi-layered. There's a lot of symbolism in it. There's a lot of, but it's really an existential dilemma about becoming a father and your place in the universe. And
It's a middle-aged man going through his midlife crisis. Come on.
It is true.
And with that said, that's probably one of my favorite books in the last two decades in terms of all the comics is Mr. Miracle.
Yeah, but it's not film noir. And I was actually hard-pressed to think of any other book that I've read recently that Tom King's written that hasn't been film noir inspired, right? I thought of Rorschach. I thought of Strange Adventures. I thought of The Human Target. I thought of this book. I even thought as far back as Heroes in Crisis. Heroes in Crisis was just a film noir story. It was a whodunit, who killed. And that's fine. But if I'm going to get my film noir nowadays, I'm going to get it from Ed Brubaker, who's been doing it a lot longer. And I'm challenging Tom King to do something else. And maybe I have to read his romance stuff. Maybe that's where I have to go. What do you guys think?
At the end of the day, is this a good read? It is. It's fine. Is it anything spectacular that would blow you out of the water? It's not. It's just a random run-of-the-mill book. And the fact of the matter is, between The Vision and Mr. Miracle, there's such a high bar in my mind for the best Tom King stuff is some of the best of comics. This is just the pretty goodest stuff. Nothing blows me away out of this one. So, yeah, whatever. Do something else.
It does have a feel of a bit paint by colors, I would say. If it wasn't set in Gotham, and if this guy wasn't Slam Bradley talking to Batman, It's not a Batman book. It could be set anywhere. It could be set in L.A. It could be set in New York. It could be set in Chicago.
But if it was, would it matter? If it is, does it matter? I don't know that it matters.
Yeah, would it matter? And that's exactly right. I mean, does it matter that it's a Batman book or not? You call it Gotham because people will buy that as opposed to, Gotham has a bit of edge to it, right? Are you going to do a miniseries? Have they done a miniseries on Metropolis? Does anybody want to? They did that again. They did do a whole television show on Smallville. So, yeah. What do I know?
No, it's happened before, but you're not going to get a lot of geography-based comic books.
Based on what you just said, J.A., I have two questions for you. First and foremost, the fact that they make, in this particular book, Gotham City actually be, the best place to live, and, Metropolis
Metropolis got crime problems and everything, and they allude to it. The cops are saying it's the best place to live, but what's not included in that is that it's the best place to live if you have the right skin tone and you live in the right area of Gotham. Because if you don't live in that area and you are not a white person, then it's not so good to live there, especially when the cops are just randomly picking you up and eliminating you. Because what was that? They called it a NWC, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stood for Negro Went Crazy. And that's how they justified killing somebody.
Yeah.
Right. Who's too uppity.
The corruption, or the seeds of corruption, are all here. You know, and this story is supposedly how Gotham became what it is. You know, you get Slam Bradley doing the assaults on, was he the police commissioner? Or just his chief? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why Crime Alley becomes Crime Alley. So all these things are there, including references ahoy to owls, and owls being the super secret, symbol of Gotham's underground, which Scott Snyder would bring up. But it's just, this is just another story where they're like, hey, remember all those things we told you?
They're a little bit wrong.
Oh no!
And I guess that dovetails into my second question, which was, again, we just recently read a book a couple weeks ago where we had Tom King take all the members of the Justice League International, and he weaved those characters into a film noir setting, and we kind of commented that, like, oh, that was kind of neat, how he took superheroes and he deconstructed them and he put them in there. I mean, again, he's kind of sort of doing the same thing here. Is it because this is Gotham and this is Batman and, like, again, who cares? Is that why this doesn't work and Human Target was a more original idea?
There's no superheroes in this. Batman shows up to at the beginning, at the end, to listen to the story, essentially. This old guy in the hospital. So he hasn't deconstructed anyone, as opposed to he hasn't included them. So besides the fact that they're both sort of based on film noir tropes, I don't think there's a lot in common with the two.
And that's the fact of the matter is, at least for me, I was very into the Justice League International. So seeing all those JLI characters, even though King played fast and loose with their personalities, you know, and it wasn't a spot on accurate representation, like, I was having fun watching him play with those characters. I don't have as much of a connection to Slam Bradley. He's been around. There've been a handful of really good Slam Bradley stories out there, but I didn't have that connection there. And so whenever you have this story that, other than just making references, this is like the, you know, that movie that alludes to the really cool songs and movies that you've seen in an effort to be cool. Like, no, you're just referencing other cool stuff. Like, the shell of this is just the shell.
Yeah, I think it's really treated sort of like Easter eggs, right? Ooh, there's an Easter egg. Oh, this became Ace Chemicals, or that's why the commissioner was so corrupt until Gordon took over. And a lot of the story, I was like, this is the Lindbergh baby. This is a retelling of the Lindbergh baby.
But that's like a classic film noir trope, though, like the baby disappearing and the machinations around the kidnapping and who's really in charge. I mean, I saw it from a mile away.
But yeah, you know that the baby's dead, one, and that it's got to be the Waynes or somebody in that group doing it. How did you feel about them making Sue sort of the Catwoman?
I thought that was going to go further. You know, there's a point when Richard, you know, falls in love with Queenie, and they have a genuine relationship in this, and they decide to run away or whatever, and so she's helping him be
I don't think they decided to run away. That's the story he told her, because he just needed to get the money. He was never going to use the money to run away. He was going to use the money to pay off his debts. Debts, probably, which they didn't go into. That would have been interesting. He probably owed... Who's the big crime boss in Gotham?
Falcone.
Yeah.
Falcone, yeah. What if he owed the Falcone family money?
Or the Maronis. Wasn't the Maronis also a crime family?
Yeah. Or, how about this? How about Queenie is Catwoman's grandma? And Catwoman was from Gotham City, and her dad is actually a Wayne, and Batman Bruce Wayne isn't really a Wayne, because he's a Bradley. Thomas Wayne, who was Batman's dad that dressed up like Batman before he was Batman, actually wasn't a Wayne. He was a doctor and everything, but he was actually Slam Bradley, the detective's baby, and that was different because it came out later because of this story.
So, long story short, it's still okay that Catwoman and Batman are having sex, because they're not just, like...
They're not related.
No, but yeah.
Well, through marriage, because Richard was married to Constance, but then Constance had the baby with Slam, and then Richard had the baby with Queenie, and so they're half-brother, half-sister. I don't know what that's like on the genetic charts, whether... I don't know.
That's how those blue bloods always do that kind of stuff. This
explains
weird.
Why Damian's so screwed up.
In any case, we've got more of The Last Comic Shop with ratings, more discussion of Gotham City Year One right after these commercial breaks. So stay tuned for that.
Seriously, you ever see the size of Damian's head? There's got to be something wrong there.
Hey, I'm Jeremy Plum, and I'm here with my good friend Dan Bublitz, and I want to talk to you about a new podcast we're doing.
That's right. Welcome to Panel Picks, a new podcast on Tape Deck Media.
We're just two comedians that love comic books a ton, and we want to be your new comic book best friends.
And we release our podcast every Tuesday just in time for New Comic Book Day. We're going to go over everything coming out each week and spotlight our favorite books.
Not only that, Dan, we're going to talk about our favorite old books. We're going to talk about the amazing self-published books that are out there. And we're going to give you all the pop culture news you're going to want.
Panel Picks Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. So take us with to your favorite local comic shop.
And let's go on this weird, wacky journey together.
Enough said.
LastComicShopPodcast.com is the destination for all things shop. Plan your week with upcoming show schedules, the latest books, recommendations, and chatter from the crew. Subscribe to the show on all major podcasting platforms from one convenient location. Show your support and browse the merch store. T-shirts, tanks, hoodies for the fam, coffee mugs, magnets, totes, and more. Check out exclusive content through the show's YouTube channel and follow the pod on Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads, and others. All this and so much more at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com. www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com.
All right, Rec, with more Last Comic Shop, and it is now time for our ratings, where although this isn't technically a Batman book, I'm still going to plug it as a Batman book in all the social media posts. I'll be like, you love Batman? Here's where Batman's Pat did some stuff. Come read about it. Hell, he rode around in an old truck and was listening to Hank Williams songs. No, that was just my Pat. All right, so we've got 1 out of 4 scale from J.A., who shares a Pat with me. What's our 1 out of 4 scale this week, J.A.?
1 out of 4 ransom notes.
Ooh, there you go. I don't think we even talked about that. How, like, it was all signed by the Batman. And I was just like, that's kind of weird. I mean, there's a bat cave in it, but, like, shrugs?
It's all part of the lineage, just like Thomas Wayne was Batman for Halloween and Bruce Wayne was Batman because of the cowardly and superstitious lot. Not great-great-grandpappy Batman, because, you know, the grandma's ex-husband Batman, you know, was using it for his sex dungeon. All these Waynes and their bats.
Yeah, but it kind of made... I'll say that was the only thing that really bothered me. It kind of cheapened how, like, Batman just sitting there in a chair and a bat flies through the window and he has this epiphany. Oh, I shall become a bat. Like, no, yeah. It's like everybody thought
and
of that
also
same
that
thing.
The secret entrance to the Batcave was already in the mansion.
Yep.
Kind of dumb. That made me angry.
You know what got to me? And the more I talk about this book, the less I like it. But no, they do the thing where they're homaging previous creators with, like, street names or building names. And this book is chock full of it. And I was like, man, oh, day, if this book demonstrated half of the talent that people like Jim Aparo and Walt Simonson and
Infantino Airport.
Yeah, all these people that are name dropped in this book. Like, it got to the point where I saw so many name drops, they just started making me more and more frustrated. These people brought original ideas to Batman. That's why their names are on your list. Why don't you try doing something worthwhile?
Wow. All right. Well, let's let that train of thought continue, Chad, with your rating of Gotham City Year One. So you just kind of slammed it a little bit, Slam Bradley. Are you going to keep it up?
Yeah, no, I really enjoy Phil Hester. I like his art. I thought it fit. I just didn't think it was special. The story here is not something special, and it tries so hard to be special. And like I said, it's Tom King keeps trying to make Fetch happen. His Batman run, you know, he was supposed to write 100 issues of Batman in continuity, and that fizzled out after 70 or so. And then, he's going to finish up in Catwoman Batman, and then that fizzled out. And, you know, he's going to do this miniseries set in the world of Batman. And that's a fizzler, too. And it's just such a shame because, you know, you have such high hopes because of what you've seen before. So I'm going to give this a 2.5. It was here. It existed. It was fine. It's probably better than I'm ranking it. It just makes me mad. It's wasted potential. Like, I feel like Slam Bradley would walk in and crack his knuckles and whip these guys into shape and we get something better. But no, it doesn't. We just get this derivative. 2.5.
Okay. Well, that's actually a little high compared to my rating, which is just a full-on 2. This is an average book. And maybe I'll put the caveat that it's an average Tom King book, too. Because, again, I will say, I really do enjoy Tom King's writing. There's a lot of good lines and dialogue in this particular book. The writing is kind of snappy at times. Bill Hester's art does fit some of what's going on. So it was kind of a page turner, I won't lie. And if Tom King wants to write film noir stories for the rest of his career, well, more power to him, I guess. I'll read them occasionally, whether they star, you know, tangentially DC characters or not. Like, he doesn't have to do it anymore if that's what he wants to do. He can just write stories with film noir. And again, but in doing that, I will always say, like, I'm like, oh, look at that Tom King book that's kind of like an Ed Brubaker book. Boy, I should read some Ed Brubaker. Wow, I really need to read some Ed Brubaker. Ends up being my recommendation for this week. But in any case, I'm not saying that there's not enough room in the comic book universe for both Ed Brubaker and Tom King writing film noir books, but I feel like Tom King has shown me that he can write much more than that. He wrote Mr. Miracle, which is head and shoulders probably one of the best books that has ever been written in the last 30 years of comics. Can really say that in all honesty. One of the best books we ever read. And this is not even in that same ballpark. This is somewhere out in the parking lot, you know, having a couple beers, didn't even get in for the sixth inning. So, like, yeah, it's a 2. J.A.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just a 2 for me as well. It was a page-turner. The dialogue is snappy. The art's really nice. But the story is kind of meh. It's easy to see where it's going. I didn't think it was so original. The little Easter eggs here and there got annoying after a while, as if to remind you why this is a Batman book or why you should care. Then it's not just a Raymond Chandler novel with Philip Marlowe. I will say, I thought he did his film noir much, much better, as we mentioned, with Human Target. And like you, I really enjoyed the variant cover by Greg Smallwood, and so then looked up some Greg Smallwood art to see what else he had done so I could read a Greg Smallwood book, because I wanted to see some more Greg Smallwood art, and that's my recommendation, is another book by Greg Smallwood. So, yeah, just a 2.
Yeah, that's, I think, honestly, this, and we'll see when ratings come out later on this year, Chad, but I'm interested to see whether or not this is actually the lowest rated Tom
King. No, there'll be, Tom King book, yes.
Yes, this is the lowest rated Tom King book ever on the Last Comic Shop podcast. Tom, you're doing a wonderful job. If you ever want to stop by the shop, we would love to talk with you. We love
smack on your book that you just
did. You will
did.
Continue to buy your work. It's just... Yeah,
well, that's maybe how we get them on, right? We don't get them on. If we talk up roses and platitudes, they're like, yeah, everyone does that. But if we talk smack on their book, then, as history has proven, they come on and want to talk to us.
All right. Well, one thing that we love to talk about is comic books. And here are some other comic books that you can pick up at your local comic book shop. It's called Recommendations. Again, if you want to pick up Batman, Gotham City Year One, I don't even know if they put Batman in the title, but again, I'm plugging this as a Batman book. You can pick it up either in a wonderful deluxe hardcover, or you can find the single issues if you still, they're probably still available somewhere. But yeah, we're going to start off recommendations with Chad Smith, who I feel like has another Batman book that kind of dovetails with some things we talked about earlier in the show.
Yeah. Like, you know, this one pissed me off a little bit. My recommendation is another book that kind of makes me agitated. It is the Batman, the Brave and the Bold anthology series. And the reason why it's so frustrating is, man, anthologies drive me crazy. You get a little bit of a story, and then a whole different story, and then a little bit of another story. Ah! But the problem is, in these Batman Brave and the Bold books, traditionally there are four stories in each issue. And I actually picked it up initially because we're still trying to make fetch happen. There's a Batman by Tom King and Mitch Gerrits, team from Mr. Miracle. There's a four-part Batman, the winning card story that talks about the first appearance of the Joker. It ran through issues 1 and 2 and then issues 5 and 9. So it skips away, you know, for an issue or two. And so I was reading it for that and, you know, enjoying that. And then there was a Stormwatch story. So I skipped that because it's Stormwatch. And then there's a Superman story in the first 3 issues by Chris Cantwell and Javier Rodriguez. That was really awesome. And so while I'm hooked into there and I'm waiting for the winning card to continue, there was a story by Gillum March that ran through issues 6, 7, and 8 called Batman Pygmalion. That was really good. And then there's a Wild Dog story by friend of the show Kyle Starks and Fernando Pissarin that was real fun. And then behind that was an Aquaman story by Gabe Hardman. And then at the end of each issue, there's a little black and white story. And there's like Bruno Redondo did the one in issue 9. That one was great. Matthew Rosenberg and Matteo Scalero did issue 7. Dan Moore was in issue 1. Joelle Jones was in issue 2. Ed Brisson and Jorge Fornes, who does his Dave Mazzucchelli-style Batman, they have a black and white one in there. But there's so many great pieces to this anthology book that as long as I sat down with like 9 issues and was able to read through, okay, 1 through 4 or 1 to 2 and then 5 to 9. Okay, there's that Tom King story. Okay, now I can go and read the Black Lamp Superman story from 1 through 3. Okay, now I can go back and now I'll read Wild Dog and all that other stuff. As long as I could read them back to back to back, it was tons of fun. And so there's lots of quality things in here. And like I said, the Tom King and Miss Sherrod's brought me to the yard. I wouldn't even say their story was the best. The Pygmalion one that ran through here was also very good. Like, there's just, as frustrated as I am by the anthology format, there's a lot of really great stuff in the Batman, the Brave, and the Bold. So I'd encourage you, if you can get a hold of a, you know, a trade or get a hold of a chunk of issues, check it out. There's a little bit of something for everyone.
Yeah, I would imagine the trade sets up where they just put the stories together. You don't have to get different parts of the trade to read and skip around. It's just, there's your one story, there's your other story, you know, like a normal person would do.
But yeah, some of the story highlights from Brave and the Bold, like I said, there's that winning card story where it's the first Joker's experience spread out over 4 parts. But it is a truly horrifying take on the Joker, where he is doing these setups to his jokes, and then it just ends up him talking to children and then murdering their family. It's terrifying. It's real good stuff. And then in the Pygmalion story by Gillum March, there is a Batman who has amnesia. Ah, he's taken in by this family. This one woman who he rescued once and her daughter, and he's trying to relearn how to be Batman. But it turns out he's not actually Batman. Ah, he's not a Batman. Ah, he has the cloak of Batman with all this Batman stuff. Ah, no, it is real fun. And then Wild Dogs, you know, he's getting sued for copyright infringement. He's just being a screw up, and very similar to Kyle Stark's Peacemaker story. If you enjoyed that, you'll enjoy this one. Aquaman has to help out the Gorilla City. And so you see underwater things and gorillas and the aliens from that invasion storyline, the Dominators.
They have the giant teeth.
Yes. Yes, they do. There's just so many fun things. And then you get those little black and white stories at the end that are like, why Batman, his family's important and all that. Like, I don't know. There's so much talent on that book. It's worth the anthology format. It's worth, you know, picking up chunks at a time. That's it. But the fun of anthologies is figuring out where the heck is that next part of that story they said was
right. And that's how they get you. That's how they get you to buy all of them or find all of them. You're like, I want to finish that story. That's like, oh, back in the day when they had the Wednesday comics. Boy, like, ooh, to find they were great, but like to find like all those. Man, sometimes in to find those nowadays, it was much nicer when they put out the big deluxe hardcover, which is, again, a great recommendation, but not mine. My recommendation this week is another film noir, and I mentioned him several times on the show already. It is Ed Brubaker. That's another guy that we've done a lot of comic books here on The Last Comic Shop from. Not only Ed Brubaker, but his running buddy, Sean Phillips. One of our unanimous fours on The Last Comic Shop is the original Reckless, which we did a couple years back, in which former FBI agent turned private eye Ethan Reckless, who was involved in an explosion or something, then goes around, he lives in a movie theater, drives a cool van, solves murder mysteries, whatever. It's awesome. So the Reckless series is great. And as I was reading Gotham City year one, I wanted to go back and read some, and I happened to see part two of the Reckless series called Friend of the Devil. Again, done by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. It was on my shelf, and I said, I have not yet read that. I'm going to go back and read it. And boy, if I thought that Reckless Part 1 was really good, I think that Part 2 is even better. Now, again, you don't need to read Part 1 to understand Part 2. It just continues the same story with the same character of Ethan Reckless, still living in a movie theater, still trying to kind of be like that beach bum surfer dude that's, you know, driving around in a custom van. But this particular story deals with the fact that he falls in love with a local librarian named Lynn. And Lynn has a half-sister that disappeared mysteriously some years later when she was trying to become a Hollywood starlet. And so Ethan, in his love for Lynn, decides to track down what happened to Maggie, her sister. And it leads him into a web of 70s B-movie seduction and sleazy movies and satanic cults and skinheads. And it's just an amazing book from beginning to end. Keeps you guessing, keeps you moving forward, real page turner. And boy, I really felt like when I was reading my comics this week, that Gotham City Year One was kind of my horse divorce. You know, it was the that's right, not hors d'oeuvres, horse divorce. And this was really my main course, was reading more Reckless. And so I know you guys are fans of the Reckless series. You also gave it fours. I would highly recommend going back and reading the second book, Friend of the Devil. I think you'll love it just as much as I did. J.A.
All right. So, as I said, I was really taken by the variant cover by Greg Smallwood. So I went and did a Greg Smallwood Google search and found some other stuff that he had done. Some of it we had read already. And I landed on Moon Knight Lunatic. Ooh. From 2016 by Jeff Lemire and Greg Smallwood with colors by Jordi Belair. And this is basically Mark Spector is in an asylum getting shock therapy and drugs and talking to this therapist. And the whole idea is like, is he crazy because he thinks he's Moon Knight? And the therapist saying, you've been here since you're 12. You go through this all the time where you think you're Moon Knight. You're not really Moon Knight. It's all in your mind. And then he dresses up, and when he puts the Moon Knight costume on, instead of looking like normal people, all the orderlies become dogs, and the therapist becomes some Egyptian goddess that's trying to steal his soul. And he's talking to Khonshu, and Khonshu saying, oh, our worlds are colliding, and these evil Egyptian gods are coming over. And when he puts the mask on, he sees New York, and there's a pyramid there, and it's full of sand everywhere, and it's going crazy. But then he takes his hood off, and they go back to being orderlies, and New York looks like New York. And so it's playing on this whole, is he crazy or are we crazy or is it all in his mind? And I really like that idea. I love the idea that, it's telling a superhero story, but at the same time, you don't know if it's all existent between his two ears. And the whole time, instead of fighting all these evils, he's just fighting orderlies in a hospital.
Right. It sounds a lot like those couple of episodes of the Moon Knight series with Oscar Isaac that was on Disney Plus. And I do agree, J.A., like, if you like those particular episodes and, like, kind of the mind f***ery that was going on with that, I think this is a better thing to read because that, plus you get Greg Smallwood art.
Yes, and you get Mr. Knight shows up.
That's a great recommendation for anybody that really loved that Disney Plus Oscar Isaac show. Pick up JA's recommendation today. And make sure that you're picking up more episodes of The Last Comic Shop, and it's super easy to do. All you have to do is go out to www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com and rate and review and subscribe. We're on all of the podcasting platforms, and you can just click on one of these little buttons on the website, and it'll take you right there, and that's how you get signed up. It's great. Plus, we got links to YouTube, which, man, we're just crushing it. Over the last couple of months, we just have these comic book cover collections every single day. People have been loving it. You can watch minute-long shorts about our episodes. So if you only have a minute to listen to The Last Comic Shop, you can do that and check out some of our past content in a very digestible form. All that great stuff out on the website. Man, O'Day, it is great.
And there you go. And while we might be the Last Comic Shop podcast, we don't want to be the Last Comic Shop. So we encourage everybody to go out to your local comic shop, where you can find things like Gotham City Year One, or you could find things like Batman, Brave and the Bold, the anthology series, or you could find things like Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, the Reckless series, including Friend of the Devil, or maybe you want to find some of that sweet, sweet Lemire and Smallwood Moon Knight Lunatic. All that and more is waiting for you at your local comic shop. Make sure you check that out, and then swing on back to www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com. Where you can check out what else, J.A.?
Well, we've got links to our merch store, so maybe go there first. Get yourself a tote bag so that when you're in your local comic book shop, you've got something to carry all that new swag that you bought. This week only, I can't say that we have any bat cowls or capes because Batman wasn't really in this book.
Do we got trench coats?
Some Metamucil?
Yes.
For Old Man Slam?
Some Sudoku books?
We've got a special on 23andMe. Find out who your great-grandpappy is.
There we go.
Lordy Hannah. Yeah. We're having fun here at the Last Comic Shop, and that fun's going to continue over the next couple of weeks. Not next week, because it'll be just a normal one, but in 2 weeks from now, we start Movie Mayhem here at the Last Comic Shop, where we're pairing comic books and movies. And one of those weeks, man, another Batman book coming at you, when we're going to be celebrating the 35th anniversary of Batman 89. Yep, for us all us old fogies that remember seeing it in the theater, man, are we feeling old this year. Until then, I'm the host with the most, Andy Larson. I'm joined by Chad Smith and J.A. Scott, and we hope that you stay safe. Stay slamming. That's right. Woo! Slam Bradley! And remember...
If you want to get nuts, let's get nuts.
What do you think is tougher, Slam Bradley or the Batman 89 cereal? Or was like the knockoff Captain Crunch, but it was made of glass?
Yes. Why did every time they came out with one of those licensed property cereals, it was always just a Captain Crunch remake?
Not true. Not true. Spider-Man and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles shared checks with marshmallows, because right. Why not?
And the marshmallows were bunk. I bought that for the marshmallows, and I'm just like, these don't taste like Lucky Charm marshmallows at all. This is like styrofoam peanuts.
I like that one. That's good.
The Last Comic Shop Podcast was a 2024 Black Angus production.